You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
There we go. Sorry about that. In other news, the Prime Minister of Sweden visited Washington today, and my tiny little nipples went to France.
What did he just say?
Check the prompter.
The prompt is fine.
Evan, read the copy, please. The copy's good. Just read it.
The White House Reception Committee greeted the Prime Rib Roast Minister, and I do the cha-cha like a sissy girl. I like a do da cha-cha. I'm sorry, we seem to be having some technical difficulties. In other news... my apologies.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Yes, man's got
make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 58. I'm still getting used to the entire new numbering system.
I saw your eyes widen and look desperately for the numbers.
I was looking desperately for the numbers. 58 for the 1st of October, 2011. There we go. And we're doing the whole renumbering thing, and it's a 150 in old math. Right. And you get all that. Yeah. Okay, good. All right. Now, we've been having trouble in our chat room. They're saying that they can't hear the board. Why can't they hear the board? Everything seems to be going through the same way as it was before.
That's, well, we'll see if it happens again.
We'll see how that goes on clips. Can you hear us talking now?
They could just hear the us talking, but no sound on the clip or the Stitcher promo.
That's very intriguing. I wonder why.
You're intriguing.
I'm intriguing.
For those of you not listening live, this won't make any sense whatsoever.
No, because if you're listening to the audio podcast, all the clips are added in later anyway. And so, well, let's just bluff our way through it and we'll see how we go. We will see how this pans out throughout the rest of the show and we'll see if we can fix on the fly if we're going. Okay, that being said, this is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com, and I am joined in studio by... All right, we left somebody off the list here because, I don't know, things show notes were a mess. Anyway, Josh Philpott, how are you?
Yeah, what? Yeah, I'm here. Let's do this.
Richard Gray, how are you?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And he's definitely there.
And there's a newbie at the end of the table that we should introduce as David Longo. How are you?
Hi, guys, I'm good.
Okay, you need to get a little bit closer to your microphone there.
I think we should go through the hazing ritual now or later.
Why? What
did you have? As a badland. Well, there's the whole nipple thing, and then there's the...
Oh, the clamps. Don't bring in the clamps.
First rule.
First rule of Fright Club, no penetration.
First rule of Fright Club? All right. So
this is what happens when you pack four nerds into a room.
Yeah, we for those who are watching live, not everybody can be on camera. We have more people in this little studio than we've ever had. So we're going to kind of drift in.
Four of us in.
We're going to drift in every now and again. And for those who want some cover art on the actual broadcast, Dave Longo, lean in now.
Hello.
Lean in.
Me, Dave.
To us.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. There we got a picture for our cover art. All right. So this week on Film Actually, we are going to be reviewing the new Steve Carell film, which would explain our opening clip for the new Steve Carell film, Crazy Stupid Love. We are also going to check out a little bit of entertainment news, including new trailers for God Help Us, The Human Centipede 2 full sequence, and John Dies at the End. No, that's not a spoiler. Brilliant. That's the name of the film.
Brilliant. It may be a spoiler. We don't know.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most blatant title has been since Drag Me to Hell.
Oh, dude, I love it. And I love Don Coscarelli, so...
Yes, Don Coscarelli, that's it. Whatever. Don Coscarelli, who, for those
I love
who,
him so much, I don't even know
those who don't know him, directed the Phantasm films, and Bubba Hotep.
Yeah, Bubba Hotep. Yeah, yeah.
And I love this man. And we will talk a little bit more about this after we have a look at the trailer later on. Now, we do have a chat room and we do go out live and you can watch us live, even though we seem to be having problems with sound today. You can watch us live at geekactually.com/live, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. We usually start about 1:30. We're a little bit late today. You can come and check us out and join our chat room and talk to us. We start the show usually with a little collection of things that we've been watching other than our feature review, because we do watch a lot of stuff. I think we'll start with our guest. Yes. So, David Longo, what have you been watching this week other than our major film?
I walked into a video store during the week and I saw...
They still have those?
Wow, they do still have them.
Video store, you say?
Because I like to rent Blu-rays. If I'm not sure,
I
fair.
Fair
enough.
Yeah.
Fair
but
enough.
I'm glad I did, because I saw the remake of John Carpenter's The Fog.
Oh, and and you're glad of that?
Oh no, I'm glad because I got to see the original Fog again. But I ruined my night because I decided to watch the remake directly afterwards.
Yeah.
Actually, Dave, you made an observation to me earlier in the week. Before we go any further, we should probably explain who Dave is. Dave is
he just wandered in.
Dave is the operator of a website. Dave is the operator of a website called DamnGoodCup.com. Yes. Which is a damn good cup. And it reviews movies and does... You don't just do movies, though, do you? You do
I do a bunch of little things here and there.
But and you're also a filmmaker as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So you do know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And
you're not just some hobo that's wandered in off
the
street.
He's got one up on the other, the rest of us.
And you made a really interesting observation, and I'm not going to throw you on the spot for you to go, what did I say? So I'll remind you. But you made a really interesting observation to me, which I thought was really relevant, which is you said that in watching The Fog, the Carpenter Fog, it had grown-ups in it.
Absolutely.
And then you watched the remake, and it was all fetuses. Yeah. And you were saying that it really just shows you that there's...
I think little shits was my
Little
exact
shits
phrase.
Was your exact term. Sorry, I was borrowing one of my mother's terms. She refers to all the young actresses out there as little fetuses. And she was, and you were basically saying that there was no depth to the remake, because there's no depth to the actors.
To the actual people in it, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was such an incredibly astute observation. That really, because that is exactly what's wrong with almost all of the remakes that are happening today, is that we don't seem to cast anybody over the age of 25 in anything.
and it's prevalent in heaps of other aspects of that remake as well, especially the music choices. It's the biggest one. Because in the original, we've got her, you know, broadcasting classical music throughout the whole film. In the remake, the very first thing we hear is like a Blink-182 song.
And the kids are listening to. Yeah.
And the classical music sets a tone.
Oh, absolutely. It's incredibly atmospheric, the original. Mm. And like even down to like the knocks. I don't know if you guys can hear that. The knocks of the ghosts. In the original, it's like bang, bang.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no subtlety to any of it.
Well, the other thing that I really hate is it seems to be a bit of a horror movie thing now, which is that, like, apparently there was no horror movie fans in the 90s at all, and apparently only, like, the generation before me actually watched horror movies, because that seems to be all we cast now, like, in every single film.
Yeah.
Like, it's getting terrible, in my opinion, because you have no grounding actors, you have no people that actually care about horror or people that have been there and actually were there when we first started doing it. So it's like you just get these people that just come off like they would never act like that in a situation like that. Like these people,
they wouldn't
are supposed
be
to
out
be
like in the middle of the ocean on a little yacht. Like
exactly. And everybody that parties in these films parties in really unrealistic ways where they're all like, whoa, let's go. And like everybody's got their tits out and people are running. And I'm just looking at them going, my God, that is very different to my Saturday night. Right.
Just very quickly, not to detract from what you're saying, but I will. That film, John Dies at the End, our chat room has put an astute observation that says, are we allowed to sue for false advertising if he doesn't?
No, no, you're not, because that movie's going to be amazing, and if anybody sues over that movie.
Thank you, Snake Oz, for that. I like that. What else have you been watching, Dave?
I went and saw a film called Norwegian Wood, based on a Murakami book. But I'll tell you that when I was in high school, I attempted to read the book, got halfway through, because it was really bad. In the movie, I would have walked out halfway through as well if I wasn't at a critic screening and would have felt embarrassed to have left. Is it painfully slow?
Wow. And you can win tickets to Norwegian Wood on the realbits.com.
Nice plug.
If you like endless shots of people looking over the beach waves or crying, then realbits.com.
Yeah. It's it's got some definite pacing to it.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I've seen it. I interviewed the director a couple of months ago, and the man is far more interesting than the film he made.
What's your opinion on the film, by the way?
I had a lot of problems with it. Yeah. I'll be putting out a full review this week on the site, but I think exactly everything you've said is right. Yeah. It's a weirdly paced film.
It's like the epitome of navel gazing.
The novel is all about it is in a way. The novel is all about an act. So it's kind of like the writer's process in a way. It's about this person looking back. As soon as you take that sort of author's voice out of it and make it into a film, it kind of loses a lot of its potency.
Well, on that note, Richard, why don't you tell us what you've been watching this week?
What have I been watching this week? Well, I watched a movie on Monday. I've been keeping a religious theme going all this week. I saw a movie called Higher Ground, which is Vera Farmiga, or Farmiga.
I like Farmiga.
This is her directorial debut as well, and she directs and stars in it. And so traces her life through from when she was a young girl through to sort of living with a... It's not exactly a cult. It's just a really tight-knit little Christian community. Mm-hmm. And they're a little bit cultish, and they're a little bit... You know, women are very much preached to when not the preachers. Yep. But it's never overt in its own preachiness, and it's never really tries to make a religious message. It's just kind of a musing on faith, and it's just a really powerful, beautiful little film. And I really, it's out this week in Australia. This coming,
I'm gonna see it.
So I urge everyone to go and see.
I actually wanted to see that one, but I went to see something else, which I'll talk about in a second.
That's the same thing I did.
Yeah,
as well.
We'll talk about that one together, Dave.
It was interesting seeing this in between Red State and the remake of Footloose. Both movies
dealing with religious themes.
So, which is the other movie I saw this week, was the remake of Footloose. I'm also on my 80s kick at the moment, and last night I watched back to back Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I hadn't watched it for a while. And
Do I? Yes, I will. No shirt, no shoes, no dice.
I just want to say Phoebe Cates.
Just do a Google search, boys. You'll know what we're talking about.
I know what we're talking about.
Yeah, she married Kevin, she married Kevin
She's
Klein,
still married to Kevin Klein.
And she hosts dinner parties now. That's what she does.
Yeah, she retired from acting to be a housewife, basically.
Pretty much, so. And she does society events.
I saw a statistic once that said that was the most freeze frame moment in video history.
Oh, she was gorgeous.
She was beautiful. And the other movie I saw, interesting, same era, called Class. Which was the
I liked Class. I saw that back in the 80s.
It's a confused movie because it doesn't quite decide whether it wants to be a frat house movie with lots of pranks or whether it's going to be like a kind of a graduate sort of thing.
I think it was kind of a graduate for the 80s.
Look, this is the debut film.
Nowhere near the quality of The Graduate. Don't write.
No.
Okay.
It's got Andrew McCarthy in it, but it's with his crazy eyes. But it's also got like the debut film of John Cusack.
That scene in the hallway of Cusack
Virginia
smoking.
Madsen,
and the teacher comes along and he sucks the cigarette into his mouth.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Brilliant stuff.
I think Alan Ruck, it's his debut film as well, who of course played Cameron in Ferris Bueller.
And it has the very famous elevator scene. So.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, so it's a great little film. So if you haven't seen it,
do you like to go up or do you like to go down?
Yeah.
I saw that at the cinema back when I was in high school, and that was really daring back then. Let me tell you, it was good.
Yeah.
I like
it's still
that
very risque today.
Yeah,
actually,
it is. Yeah. I haven't actually seen it in years. I'm going to have to watch that again, I think.
I'll probably be writing about it on an upcoming column.
Oh, well, I will make sure I read it then. We have our chat room saying, Snake Oz is saying, that's Dave in the corner of the chair, I think. Yes, you're not going to be able to see us all. I'm here. The camera doesn't stretch as far as we want it to. And, you know, it's more important that the guests get on camera. So you guys see me every week. You don't need to see me again.
The beautiful people in the middle.
Sorry?
Why am I here?
Because you're... beautiful with your luscious
hair. You were about to say guests.
No, I was about to say you're beautiful.
You had the female
with your luscious hair.
There we go.
We gotta have the luscious
one comment about the hair.
Gotta have the luscious hair on
camera. Oh god, it's just so creepy.
Come on, man.
You guys do that.
Josh, do the flip. Come on.
Oh, yay! We need the Charlie's Angels theme playing.
Because he's worth it.
He's worth it. Josh, what have you been watching this week?
As usual, guys, I'm under the gun at the moment with the game stuff. I am pushing through thousands and thousands of titles and trying to get some semblance of an ending to them, which, of course, puts in a lot more hours than films do. But I did, as sort of a side note, and I will very quickly touch on it, I said that I was going to review because... due to being under the gun and having the inability to make it to this film, I haven't seen the feature film, so I'll be very quiet. Yes, I know. It doesn't happen very often, but this was one of those situations where, unfortunately, I missed it. So I was like, all right, well, let's dig through my DVD pile, and I'll grab out something that I could bring to the show to review, and hopefully it might be a gem in the rough. So I grabbed the film 22 Rounds, which is a film starring Jean Reno.
Really? It's not what you were saying in the car.
Okay, so the story behind this film is basically, or to the best of my knowledge, because that's about all I could get as I watched through this film. It is an overseas film, it's a French film, and it is apparently based on a very famous book, which basically has, 22 Bullets.
22 Bullets.
22 Bullets. It's directed by Richard Berry, and basically the story behind it is that Jean Reno's character is basically a mob boss out of three mob bosses that started at the same time, and they've all kind of worked together, and basically his character gets shot to bits, and I mean like 22 times.
That's the
like
title.
Shotguns, pistols, everything.
Shot to bits, you say?
Yes, like literally shot
just
to
like
bits.
Just like realbits.com?
Stop with the plugging, all right? We've talked about
it. I've
this.
Tried, but I can't. Yeah.
We'll let you plug yourself at the end. And I won't say it at this point. That's when we turn off the video feed, though. Okay.
And it all gets a little blue.
Sorry, Josh, you continue.
I don't know if I want to after that. So anyway.
Check the chat room, Josh. Shampoo commercial, right? It's not going to end for him.
So anyway, yes. Essentially, the film plays out with these three mob bosses, and Charlie gets shot, which is Jean Reno's character. He gets shot to bits, and he manages to survive this somehow, and then basically goes to find out what happened. Now, this is about where it stops making any decent amount of sense, or at least sense that I care about, because from this point onwards, it just starts getting bizarre. Like, as an example, you would imagine a person who has a family would be relatively worried about that family, but this guy doesn't seem to be, because he just decides to go on a killing rampage, taking out all these guys in no sequential order as such, or any sort of decent concept behind his plan, to the point where my favorite scene in the movie is at about the halfway mark, where he walks into a room of these guys who have killed one of his friends with a grenade in one hand and a pistol in the other, and tells one guy he plans to kill him and the rest of the guys in the room that he plans to kill them over time. Now, this is a great concept, I guess, maybe as an action scene, because, you know, you've got the showdown, he's got the grenade so that none of them can shoot him, and then he shoots one of them and then walks out of the room, and this is where his family starts getting beaten up and stuff like that. And I'm like, you had a grenade, it was live, you could have just tossed it in and left.
You're getting and so then animated, the problem, you're moving away from your mic.
Yeah, and the problem is, of course, that, you know, that would be where things would have been a lot quicker and, you know, probably worked a lot better. But then, like, it goes into bizarre things where, like, people go to meet and he gets shot at, and then he drives away on a motorcycle, and all of a sudden he's about half the size, which is great. He's obviously a stunt double and drives like a maniac. This guy's supposed to be like in pieces. He's supposed to have nerve damage to certain sections. One of his hands doesn't work, yet he somehow manages to drive a motorcycle in this ridiculously car chase kind of a way. It was just an absolutely diabolically messy film, and I would never wish it on anyone.
I shouldn't go see this.
So this will be the review. That's it done. And that's about all that I have watched that I've actually cared about this week.
Cool. All right.
So yeah, that's me.
All right. Now this week, David Longo and I saw a film together, and then Richard and I saw a film together. So first of all, we'll talk about David Longo and I managed to get to see Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy on
fuck
Monday.
Fuck you guys.
This was
movie together, Josh.
Yeah, but it won't be that movie.
Well, I haven't seen that movie.
Did you guys see Smurfs?
We can both hate
it. What was it together?
Yeah.
And then we'll just...
Guys.
Yeah.
Can I continue?
give us a minute, Dave.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is with Gary Oldman and based on the Jean Le Carré novel. It is an exceptional piece of work. We're going to fully review it later, but it doesn't come out till January in Australia.
No, it's been bumped up to November.
No, she told us it's January. Really? Right, yeah, she told us it's January.
Jesus.
She said they tinkered with November, but they realized that for that film they want to give it as good a shot as they can, and January was the clearest spot.
Really? So, this is like 7,000 films coming out.
I know.
January 26th.
This is what she said. So she actually asked us, so it's not embargoed, but she did ask us whether or not we could hold reviews until it was a bit closer to the day. So we will, but we will just give her a little precursor and just say, when this film comes out, this is a must-see film. This is a grown-up movie. And as I said to our friend over at the Lennox Files, I said it was so nice seeing a grown-up movie, one that would call you in the morning. It's no one-night stand. This one's going to stick with you for a while. And it's from the director of Do the Right Thing.
No, let the right one in.
I did it again.
You did that on the night as well.
I did that. Let the Right One In.
Thomas Alfredson.
Yeah, and he directs in the same languid pace that he directs Let the Right One In.
Interesting.
And he's got this beautiful, low-key, very quiet style that he directs with, to the point where Gary Oldman actually doesn't utter a word for, 15 minutes?
It's a long stretch.
It's about 15 minutes or something. He's just there. And he's just watching, and everything that's going on around him. And when he finally does open his mouth, you go, "Oh, he speaks!" it is a really, really good film, and it is.
Is it the Gary Oldman film we've been waiting for a long time?
If he doesn't get nominated for an Oscar, there's something seriously wrong.
You and me
wrong.
Have talked about this for ages. Every now and then, he drops those films that are just like mind-blowingly good.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Yes. It's not the Gary Oldman film we wanted.
This is not the.
This is the Gary Oldman film we needed.
We needed. This is not the over the top,
it's
you know,
overdrive, yeah.
playing super weird characters and what have you. This is just a Dracula. Really mature, paced performance where he just you feel like he's in charge. You know what he's working on, and he just kind of. Figuring it out. And it's a beautiful, beautiful spy film. And hopefully this will lead on to Smiley's People and Smiley's War and the other sequels to that book. So here's hoping. The other film, we actually saw two other films, but one of them we can't talk about yet. Mm-hmm. We're embargoed. But one of them we saw, which was Footloose. The remake of Footloose. Now, we're going to fully review this next week because it opens next week. Sorry, Josh, we're doing two films next week.
That's fine. I'll watch it either way.
Yeah, we're going to do two films next week, so you don't actually have to see Footloose. It was okay. It was one of those films where I sat there and I watched it and I went, yeah, you know, it's okay. It is Footloose for this generation. It is like a stage play in the sense they've taken the script from the original Footloose and they've just reinterpreted it. We've talked about this many times where we say when they remake a film, they should keep the essence of the original or why have they remade this film when they didn't keep anything from the original? This is kind of what we've been asking for, which is like a stage play, take the script and just redo it in your own way. And now that we've seen this, I'm not sure if that's entirely the right way to do a remake.
Yeah.
But that being said, it's fun.
I think I enjoyed it a little more than you did.
I think you did. I did. Yeah.
I think it is though line for line the original film. They've used the same dialogue.
Yeah, they've used whole passage, and then they've added stuff which I didn't think they needed to add.
No, I mean it is kind of weird that they've stuck so closely to the original, and right down to the songs. They haven't really updated the songs too much either. Which I found really surprising, but I was grateful because I didn't want to hear have this really awkward kind of breakdance.
But were they covers though? The songs sounded very similar, but I think they were covers.
I think they used the Kenny Loggins original because I think they were going for a bit of a retro.
I know that we've had the soundtrack playing at work, and a lot of them are redone by current.
Oh, really?
Artists.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought they were using
on the soundtrack.
The
maybe I don't know. They sounded
definitely.
So...
Look, it was definitely a film that I'm not sure if I want to. As a music fan, I don't like the album. So I think that I would struggle with
what's funny
film.
Because Footloose has always been considered a musical and yet it's the most unmusical musical in existence.
Oh, for sure.
You know? The original is just so dark and that's what I love about it. It's like when I sat down to watch it again recently, I'd forgotten... Well, I don't even know if I've actually seen it before and I was expecting, you know, a Flashdance type film, I think. And then it comes off as this really... interesting musing on small town politics
and religion. It's a drama that
has
a few dance sequences in it, basically. And
the one scene I was so glad they kept in was the scene in which the protagonist dances his emotions away in, yes. in a factory. And that was such a brilliantly camp moment in the original. And, you know, I don't think Kenny Wormwald's ever going to be the next Kevin Bacon.
No.
but it's still a great scene. And, look, you know, they all carry it quite well. I'm not too fond of the lead, the love interest.
She's pretty, but in a vapid kind of way, a generic
25-year-old to play a 19 kind of
way. She just doesn't have any, there's no what's the word I want to use here? There's no internals to her. She's just a shell, you know?
It's also, I mean, and there's also, there was this understated sexuality in the original one. Here, it's kind of like, let's put her in the shortest shorts possible, therefore she's sexy.
Yeah.
You know?
And she had a nice butt, but that was better.
I'm not arguing. Yeah, but it's
on
just,
a certain, you know, completely surface, people are going to, the young boys of today are going to go, ooh, isn't she hot?
You know,
Just not a lot to her. Although, I've got to say, Laurie Singer looked like she was sleepwalking in the first film. She had the deadest eyes of anybody. She looked stoned the entire film.
I mean, the thing is, I know I'm getting old when I got to the end of the movie and she comes out in a prom dress. I'm going, honey, I wouldn't wear that. That just doesn't match at all.
So anyway, we'll review this next week in more detail because there are a few things we want to talk about with this one. And we'll kind of cover more ground next week. But we did see that, and look, when it opens on Thursday, if you thought at all that you might want to go see it, yeah, go see it. It's fine.
It's a lot of fun.
I give it a resounding average.
And I would give it an extra star or half a star on top of what Dave said.
Well, there you go. So, and then of course we also saw one other film this week, but we're not allowed to talk about it yet. So we will come back to that next week as well. It's our featured review next week as well. Mm. And all we'll tell you is that it stars Hugh Jackman and it's about robots. All right,
who we met this week.
We met Hugh Jackman on the red carpet of the world premiere, and that's actually going up on all our sites in the next couple of days.
There's some photos up on my site, and also up on our good friends at Spotlight Report as well.
And they'll be up on my site this weekend as well. Mm. So that stuff is proliferating around the sites now. So for those who don't know, Geek Actually, RealBits.com, Damn Good Cup, Hip-Hop, netonline.com. Yay, I got it. And Spotlight Report are kind of a conglomerate of websites where we share information with each other and we do group interviews and stuff like that. And there'll be more information on that as it comes, but this is why you'll often see stuff cross-posted across these sites. So that's all that. And I think we should do a feature film review.
Let's do it, man.
Let's do a feature film review. I'll talk about it next week. I've been watching more of the premieres for the fall season, too.
Oh, right. I watched a couple more as well.
I'll talk about those next week. We're running over. All right. So this week we're going to do Crazy Stupid Love. Directed by... Now, you've interviewed these directors. Can you give me the pronunciations of these names?
It's Glenn Ficarra and John Requa.
Thank you. And it is written by Dan Fogelman. It stars Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore, Emma Stone, who was cute as a button. Can I just say that? She was cute as a button.
I'll watch Emma Stone at any time.
Pretty much. Yeah. She's got like anime eyes, though. She really does. She's got big eyes. Anna Lee Tipton, Jono Bobo.
I thought that name was so awesome.
That's the kid, isn't it?
Yeah, the kid.
Yeah, that's the kid. Yeah. Bobo. Joey King, Marissa Tomei in a wonderful...
Oh.
A wonderful turn in this. And Kevin Bacon. Hey, there he is.
Six
again.
Degrees.
There you go.
6 degrees.
Yeah. All right. So this description comes straight from Warner Brothers. And they say, at 40-something, straight-laced Cal Weaver is living the dream. Good job, nice house, great kids, and a marriage to his high school sweetheart. But when Cal learns that his wife, Emily, has cheated on him and wants a divorce, his perfect life quickly unravels. Worse, in today's single world, Cal, who hasn't dated in decades, stands out as the epitome of unsmooth. Now spending his free evenings sulking alone at a local bar, the hapless Cal is taken on as a wingman and protege of handsome 30-something player Jacob Palmer. All right, so that's the basic description. Let's have a look at the trailer, and then we'll come back and talk about this.
25 years of marriage and you have nothing to say? I'll just say it. I slept with someone.
If you keep talking, I'm going to get out of the car.
I think the fact that I did it just shows how broken we are.
Okay.
How much we really... Oh my God!
You're getting a divorce?
Yeah.
Amy heard you crying in the bathroom. We all thought it was cancer.
Oh.
Thank God, man.
Yeah, just my relationship.
Hi, can I buy you a drink?
Uh-huh.
Let's get out of here. Want to get out of here?
Yeah.
What are you doing later?
I don't know.
I do. There's lots of beautiful women in this bar, but I can't take my eyes off of you.
It's time to go home.
Oh, it's forward of you, but okay.
Yeah.
Should I pull the car around? Have you been drinking? I'll drive.
Hey, ladies man guy. Any tips of the trade?
Your wife cheated on you because you lost sight of who you are as a man. Would you take that straw out of your mouth? It looks like you're sucking on it.
Okay.
You're sitting there with a Supercuts haircut, and you're wearing a 44 when you should be wearing a 42 regular. Credit card. Where are your wallets? Did you sleep in them?
Jeez, God!
Yeah, probably.
You would?
You gotta take control of your manhood, pal.
Can you put on some clothes, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, is this bothering you? Beautiful.
What do you want to do with me?
I want to show you off to my ex-wife and make her really jealous.
Oh, man.
I met a girl, and she is a game changer.
She's your soulmate, right? Go get her back.
Wow, how old are you?
I'm in love with her, and I don't know what to do about it.
I don't know when you and I stopped being us. You know, when I told you that I had to work late, I really went to see the new Twilight movie by myself.
And it was so bad.
Take off your shirt.
Why?
Will you take off your shirt? Seriously? It's like you're photoshopped.
All right. Sorry, our chat room is still reporting that there's no sound coming off the board. I think I know what the problem is now. You guys can. There's only two more clips, so you're going to have to go find those clips on the show notes. Our audio listeners are hearing it just fine. It looks like what you're actually hearing, guys, is a built-in microphone on one of the computers. You're not hearing the board.
Oh.
So they're just picking up a live, because if you look at the board, Josh, you know this program, our live input is not line input, it's microphone. So they're picking up that.
Wow, I'm surprised they can still hear.
I know. Sound must be shit in the chat room. I do apologize. anyway, so we will bluff our way through it. Most of what you want to hear is us anyway. So
it's all smoke and mirrors anyway.
Yeah, we just make it up as we go along. All right, so that was the trailer for Crazy Stupid Love, and I saw this film last night. I didn't get to the critic screening. I had to actually go pay for this one, and I'm happy to announce that I didn't mind paying for it. It was actually a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this film. I thought Steve Carell did a really good job putting across the emotions of somebody who's basically had his heart ripped out of his chest and having to rebuild his life.
There's something truly depressing about him in a polo shirt. Hey. every second film.
I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the dynamics of the relationships that were in it. And as I was saying when I was doing the credit list off, Marissa Tomei was fabulous as... when we first start off. Now, we don't want to give too many spoilers here, because one of the joys of this film is how these characters all start to interconnect with each other. Yeah. And that could have been... that could have not worked, and you could have sat there and gone, oh, that's really stupid how that'll... But they actually do manage to make those connections work, where you sit there and go, I didn't see that coming. Mm-hmm. You know? And that was actually very clever. And Marissa Tomei's character goes from this happy-go-lucky pickup in a bar to something entirely different and very funny. Richard, you saw the film. What did you think?
Yeah, look, I thought it was fantastic. I was really lucky because I managed to speak to both, as you mentioned before, I managed to speak to the directors and Steve Carell a couple of weeks ago.
And let me do it for you. And those interviews are up at therealbits.com.
Thank you, yeah.
And you can find mine.
Yeah.
At damngoodcup.com. Right.
And one of the things that I think is really great about this is the script. And this is Ficarra and Requa, a famous... They didn't write this script. This is the second film they've directed after I Love You, Philip Morris, which they wrote. But this script is written by Dan Fogelman, who's probably most famous for writing things like Bolt and Tangled for Disney. So this is a very big, you know, this is a big different step for him. But as Carell said when I was talking to Steve, but I think one of the really good points he made was that he was attracted to the directors because of Bad Santa, which is another thing that Ficarra and Requa wrote earlier. So they've got this sort of comic sensibility. But Fogelman's script, he said, is brilliant when on the third page the character jumps out of a moving car because he can't emotionally handle what's going on.
Yeah.
You know you're in for something a little bit different then. You know? And I think that's what's great about this thing, and you alluded to it already, Dave, was that you don't know quite what you're going to expect from scene to scene in this film. And it's really good, and it's acted superbly.
Yeah, I just love Steve Carell in that scene with the moving car when he stands up where she comes out and says, "Are you okay?" He goes, "I'll move out tonight. I'll sign what you want. Just don't talk about it anymore."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, you could just that complete and utter withdrawal that he's just, his entire life has literally just deflated in the space of a couple of hours. And he's just a beaten man because of it. You know, it's fantastic. It's really good.
Him falling out of the car thing was awesome when you watch it. But everything after that kind of is a little bit pale in comparison. Because I thought they were going to go for the, this is crazy, of the crazy stupid love. I'm like, this guy's really on an edge. And then everything after it was a bit kind of like, it's interesting, it's funny, it's nice, but this isn't
the man actually, on the edge. I think in this situation, though, I disagree with you a little bit, Dave, because I think if you had kept up the crazy aspect of it, I think what would have happened is it would have turned into Get Smart, basically.
Yeah,
whereas
I guess so.
What we're looking at here is a guy.
But I mean, like, think about like jumping out of a moving car.
Sure, yeah. But like, so. But
he would have died in real life.
But the jumping out of a moving car, well, not necessarily. I mean, he was pretty scratched up at the end of it. But
he rolled like eight times.
Like, jumping out of a moving car wasn't necessarily, I mean, it was funny in the film, but I don't think it was necessarily done as a laugh. It was as a moment of desperation.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I wanted to see.
Yeah. And what we got was that. And then from that moment, because he says later on in the film where he says, I shouldn't have gotten out of the car because I should have fought for you. And so it was a really, really powerful moment for him where he basically just was defeated in one go and didn't know how to deal with it.
And this is what separates it from other romantic comedies. This is probably going to be billed as a romantic comedy, and I will disagree with you, Mr. Longman.
Mm, fair enough.
And get out and darken my towels no more. No,
I really loved it.
But
I like that because I like that it was restrained. And this is, unlike a romantic comedy, this is not so much a romantic comedy. It's a romance film that has a lot of funny things in it.
It's a drama with funny stuff.
And this is what's really good about it. And people have said this before, and again, Carell said this at the round table I was at. People in comedies don't know they're in comedies. Characters who are in comedy movies shouldn't know that they're in a comedy. This is exactly what we're seeing here. There are a few over the top moments because these people are just reacting strangely to things.
Well, it's real comedy though.
It's real comedy.
It's essentially like, even from the trailer, you can tell there's that sense to it where it's like, these are things that really happen, and it's taking that dark, twisted look at why things like that are funny, as opposed to just being funny for funny.
You know what I really love about this film, and it's about different types of love as well. It's about like there's the love. You've got the falling out of love and refinding love with Carell and Julianne Moore. You've got finding love for the first time between Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
Yes.
You've got a different kind of love. You've got kind of a fraternal love.
Well, you've got unrequited love.
You've got unrequited love between the kid and his babysitter, which is hilarious.
And the babysitter and Steve Carell. So it's two of them.
And there's another kind of love, which is between Carell and Gosling.
Yeah.
Which is kind of that fraternal love. And it sort of came out of this really weird situation. And they found each other and became really good friends as a result of it. And so you've got all these relationships they're building. And it's very rare to find a film that deals with adult relationships in such a mature way. And I think that may be where you felt a little bit flat afterwards, because it was this crazy moment at the start. And that kind of gets you in and keeps you off foot. But then you do kind of have to expect the unexpected in the movie.
My sort of take is very grounded. There isn't much logic to everything that happens.
It's crazy and stupid, but it's love,
like, the second you start to think about the movie, that's when it all unravels.
It's the same as love, really, isn't it?
No, it's a different degree. I mean, like, you're going into a bar where Ryan Gosling picks up chick after chick after chick.
Yeah.
And at what point is there going to be another guy in that bar? There's never another guy in that bar.
No, but there are, because we see them, but we're just not focusing on them.
But I mean, like,
then you start
thinking deeper and deeper, like, you know, well, then are these girls not going to come back to this bar, or, like, you know, At what point does it break? And that's what I mean. It's like you got to think about that. I was just thinking
with the bar scene. I think they actually did that quite well, because what you've got is those scenes of Steve Carell sitting there sucking on his straw, and looking around the bar, and you see different guys trying to pick up different girls. We just don't hear them. Because he's not focusing on them, but he sees Ryan Gosling, and Ryan Gosling is particularly overt as being a player.
That's one thing I really loved about the introduction of Ryan Gosling's character, was that he approached Carell in the scene, and it's kind of like, I want to help you.
I love that scene because he says your wife, you just got a divorce, and your wife slept with Dave, what's his name, and he goes, ask me how I know this. Everyone knows this.
And the thing, you almost think up until that point that Carell is just background noise for Gosling, but clearly he's been taking this all in and thinking about processing it while he's off. So you already get an indication that his character is a lot deeper than just a ladies'
man.
Yeah.
And the thing about this movie, I guess, is that it's not till the second half really where a lot of things fall into place.
I think what happens is that the title of the film is confusing as well, because I think what the title of the film is actually saying is that love is crazy and stupid. It's not saying that it's going to be a wild and crazy time.
No,
it's just saying that it's just crazy, stupid love.
It's actually funny, on the Internet Movie Database listing, it's crazy, stupid, love.
Full stop. It actually has the full stop in it.
Which is different to how it's on the posters.
That's correct. Mm. And so when you look at it that way, you sit there and say it's all about just the craziness that is relationships. Yeah. And
it's like, this is a romantic comedy as well. It has to sort of play into those trappings.
Interestingly enough, though, but I think it actually takes those the cliches of a romantic comedy. It takes the situation of a romantic comedy and turns it on its head. Though,
well, this is exactly that. We cover this in the interview, which is really interesting. And Carell said in response to this that he said, yes, there are cliches, and we try and spot them as much as possible. And some of those cliches, and this is like, you know, this is our take on the cliche.
There's that great scene where he's in the rain and he just says to himself,
what a cliche. What a cliche. Yeah, I love that.
And he's kind of like, they said at all points they were kind of wanting to make us aware that they were aware of the cliches. Yeah. But sometimes, hey, that's life. Life is a cliche. Yeah.
Well, we had this discussion after seeing Red State when I said cliches are cliches because they happen. You know, so, and so you're going to have, you can't make a cliche free film. It doesn't happen.
If you
do that, it's not going to be realistic because none of those events ever actually happen. Yeah. So you're going to have one or two in there. I think we should talk about the Ryan Gosling Emma Stone relationship. That was actually so incredibly well handled. That
do we
scene.
Have a spoiler section?
We can. We don't. We haven't done a spoiler section for a while, but we'll try and dance around it without spoilers, and we'll see how we go. Mm. But just that scene, the fact that she's gone to him to be picked up. Mm-hmm. She's angry. She goes to him to get picked up. They get there. And you saw a little bit of it in the trailer with, you know, you look photoshopped and so forth. But what leads to every moment where she's going, okay, now we bang.
Yeah.
And then they start talking about something else. And she goes, after we talk about that, can we bang?
Yeah.
And then they start talking about something else. And you can actually see in the space of one night, really quite realistically, a relationship form in one night, you know?
And Requa and Ficarra were actually saying that. He said, you almost don't, it's not like in the movies, which was funny that they talked about, you don't sort of see someone and go, and then you fall in love instantly. You kind of talk your way into love.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really interesting take. And he said the original draft of the film had like things where they were walking along a beach and there's all this other stuff. And they said, no, we're not going
to
do that.
Yeah. And to their credit, they did not need it.
Yeah.
They summed it up in that short scene.
Because you had such two strong actors there.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because it is a comedy on the surface, a romantic comedy, but you've got Gosling, who's such a strong dramatic actor as well, which gives it a real grounded sort of element to it. And he's almost kind of, it's kind of like he's a dramatic actor in a romantic comedy, so he's kind of finding his feet for the first time in that situation. And you've got Emma Stone, who's known for kind of more outlandish films, trying to do something a bit grounded. So they're both kind of coming to that as actors in the same way.
And they're finding a balance in that scene. Yeah. Look, it was... just as an overall film, it was an incredibly satisfying experience. And they even were bold enough to leave some things unturned.
Yeah.
Where you sit there and go, okay, we haven't fully resolved it, but we don't need to. Because we've set enough balls in motion that we know it will resolve itself.
I think a lot
of
that's got to do with the actors that they cast.
Mm. Yeah.
Because on the page, a lot of it does seem superficial. But the actors bring quite a lot
to it.
You
can understand why people would avoid this kind of a film based on the fact that they're pretty much sure of what they're going to see.
Yeah, I think it's actually I think the poster is really badly marketed, this film, because you're expecting it to be Valentine's Day
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, and it's not that at all. It's actually, I think...
I've got a real Judd Apatow vibe from the marketing.
A little bit, yeah. I agree. And I think Richard hit the nail on the head, though, when he said that it is a drama. And that's first and foremost, it's a drama that has funny stuff in it. And we've talked about this before. There was a film that came out called Nothing in Common in the 80s, which its caption on the poster was, it's a comedy, it's a drama, just like life. Mm-hmm. And that for me, that caption is perfect, because that's, no matter how deep a drama is, humor happens.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, funny things come out of tragedy, you know?
Absolutely.
And,
dude,
and
you can see it everywhere you look. It's like there are times when you can only see one path, and that's why movies that are just dramas can work. But it's like, realistically, there's dark humor in everything.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. And I've said it on this show many a times, I've never heard so much laughing as the cancer ward at the Children's Hospital, yeah. you know? Because you find humor. Yeah. In everything, you know, and I think this film is a really fine balance on that. This, I think, the scene
it found humor in Velcro wallets.
Oh, the Velcro wallets! Oh, I love that. Actually, the entire shopping scene is wonderful.
Just the introduction of that Ryan Gosling to that scene with the pizza
and throwing the shoes off the balcony. And just in the background, you hear ah.
Yeah, that's such a cliched moment. The makeover scene is. Like, yeah. I've seen that in so many things. And to actually find humor in that was amazing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that was terrific. I think Ryan Gosling did a really good job in this.
Oh yeah,
though, even to the point where when he's with Emma Stone in that scene, he's taking his shirt off like in the trailer, you know, and they're talking. And he goes, "Can I put my shirt back on now?" And, and she goes, "No." and the player suddenly starts looking uncomfortable in the situation that he's in because he's now cornered.
Mm. Yeah,
and he's disarmed basically by this girl who's not playing by the rules.
And great Dirty Dancing references in there.
Yeah, absolutely. No, look, I highly recommend it. I'm going to go out and say that it is well worth your money. Go out and see it. The cinema I was in last night, I was a paying customer, and it was full, and they seemed to be having a great time. So, yeah, definitely go see it.
If you're going to see any rom-com this year, and I've seen a lot of shit. In terms of rom-coms anyway, because they've all been identical, and this is something that will actually give you value for your money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I actually came home from the cinema and said, I went straight to my lovely wife, Katie, and I said, "You will love this movie." Mm-hmm. And, you know, end of story. This is custom made for her. Mm. And I actually tweeted out, did you guys see my tweet last night where I said, I just came home from Crazy Stupid Love and found out my wife watched Megapython versus Gatoroid. I said, for those who know us, what's wrong with this picture?
just quickly before we wrap up on the movie, what did you guys think of the last 20 minutes? We won't spoil it, but...
give me a hint.
I had massive issues with the last 20
there
minutes.
There are a few kind of...
I felt it unraveled the whole thing.
There's a few kind of, I guess, Deus Ex Machina moments in there where all things kind of tie up a little too conveniently.
Yeah. It's almost... particularly with the graduation
that's
scene.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
It is a little... it's a little expected. You're waiting for it, and you're kind of waiting for him to make his...
It just felt lazy to me.
The last half an hour of the film, I was waiting for, where is he going to make his grand pronouncement?
Yeah, and
it was almost like the directors didn't even care either. Because, like, the whole movie is beautifully shot. Like,
I agree with
that. It's so well shot, and there's great soundtrack choices. And then when it gets to this scene, the camera's just locked.
Now, I get it. Just,
it's, and, like, the performances kind of drop there, and it's almost like they had to
where I was
going to
disagree with you, though. The one thing that saved that scene, though, was that Carell was fabulous in that last speech.
Carell's great the whole
when he gave
time.
That last speech.
And I hate those scenes with the speech, but it actually felt real to me. Like, it felt like I won't want to spoil anything because he's partly kind of saving his son.
Yeah.
He's partly giving a genuine heartfelt plea. It's the classic say anything moment, him holding up.
The speech itself's not what my problem is. It's how they wrap everything up in a minute and a half.
Yeah, but
they've got, like, how many characters were they juggling at that point? Like, 6 or 7
different arcs?
Quite a lot. And then it's just like 1.5 minutes, we got to get out. Because this movie's already 2 hours.
But it also kind of shows you, though, what a linchpin Carell's character is to all of the stories.
Yeah. And that's what's a little bit contrived.
Well, look, in any comedy, usually it's your last act that falls down because it's resolution. It's like when you're building something like that, you've got your funny moments, you've got your overarching story. The ending is never the bit that you're there for.
And you also walk a very fine line because in a romantic comedy or in something like this in particular, where we're setting up so many story arcs, to wrap everything up with a bow, you get criticized as being too Hollywood.
And it's perhaps their one indulgence that they've gone with there. I mean, you compare it to something like their Bad Santa script, which never cops out right to the very end. And
that's their sensibility.
Yeah.
Like, so they're a little bit.
But they didn't write new territory. No, this was written by.
The script's not bad by any means.
No, it's great, actually.
Fogelman's just the end.
Some of the strongest Disney films of the last few years. You know, he's
Tangled. Oh, yes. Been some terrible
And because Bolt is hilarious, and it's got that really off-the-wall sensibility.
Let it begin!
And he did Cars as well, right?
Sorry?
He did Cars as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, one,
but I love Tangled.
His one fault is Cars. He wrote Cars. He didn't write Cars.
I don't blame anybody for Cars except John Lasseter.
Yeah, so I think
it was a vanity project.
Absolutely. He was a gun for hire. He was a name to put on the written by credit, so he wouldn't look a complete egotist.
Absolutely. Speaking of... well shot. Dave brought this up. That sequence in the bar where we're doing the montage of all the pickups
around.
And the camera is tracking around, and as it passes each table, Carell is at each table. So it's like it's a passage of time.
Also, we didn't mention
seamless. It is so beautifully put together.
It's a slick looking pitch.
Yeah,
we didn't mention the opening title.
The shoes.
The shoes was
brilliant. The shoes was great too.
Told you everything you needed to know.
Yeah, I thought that these guys really knew how to pick their shots to really tell their story. Really,
have you all seen I Love You, Philip? I love you, Philip Morris.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's these guys. This is their second film directing.
Mm.
If this is their second film out, these guys are
going to be huge.
Yeah. I mean,
Look, I really liked Philip Morris as well. I thought that was really well put together as well. So, I think these guys. Yeah, I think you're right. These guys are ones to watch.
And they've already attached. I think I can't even remember what it was. They've written a script called Farm Girl for Reese Witherspoon.
There's a backpacker one.
I think they've just been attached to that coming up. So they're doing another one for Carell's company.
Is Bad Santa 2 happening?
I don't know. It's one thing I didn't think to ask them.
I can't see it.
I got 5 minutes with them. So.
Yeah. I think the reason why we're harping on this film a little bit long is because I think there are a lot of people who aren't going to see it.
Yeah,
because of what they think. And we just really want to make it clear that this is well worth seeing.
Absolutely.
It's not perfect, but it's well worth seeing. And I think it's one of the stronger of the relationship films. I don't want to use the term rom-com because I don't think it is. But it is a relationship film. And it's one of the stronger relationship films to come out probably the last couple of years, actually.
It's hard to get a relationship right on screen. And I think that they're on the money.
Yeah. And it's also it's hard to believe that Carell has the depth to do it, but he does.
Yeah, I mean, look, you wouldn't see Steve Carell and Julianne Moore together anywhere other than in a movie, but I believed they'd been married for 30 years.
I did too. And Julianne Moore did a great job too. We've completely discounted her, but she did a great job.
Yeah, look, again, another person typically known for dramatic roles. I mean, this is the first time I think I've seen her in a movie with her clothes on for the whole time. Sorry, people. but, you know, again, despite the fact that we didn't see her... wonderful body in this film. I think it might be a sign of maturity for her as well. You know, that she's got the strength to play. I mean, she is a seasoned actress, so she's got the strength to play both funny and serious in this film as well. And Gosling is at the other end of his career, yet he has that thing. So it's an incredibly strong cast.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, and even Emma Stone, who sometimes annoys me.
Right there with you.
Don't get me wrong. I pretty much loved everything she's been in, but she has been playing that character a lot.
It's a kind of character she's very comfortable with.
Yeah. At least, unlike in The Help, she doesn't look like a young Lindsay Lohan. In The Help, I've got to say, like as much as I like The Help, she looks shockingly like Lilo. I mean, it was.
I disagree with you, but that's all right.
it was frightening in some sense.
I quite liked her in The Help.
I liked her in The Help. She just looked like Lindsay Lohan.
I didn't think so. Her boobs aren't big enough.
We'll fight after the show.
All right, all the way around. Would you recommend it to a friend, Dave Longo?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd just say to glaze over the last 20 minutes. Yeah. But this movie's great because, I got surprised by a certain development in the movie, and I rarely get surprised by these kind of movies, so that was great. And the kids didn't annoy me at all.
Yeah,
I thought the kids were great.
The kids were good, actually.
We haven't mentioned the kids.
Yeah, and Carell is Carell, you know.
I love the fact that these directors will do something, and this is minor spoiler, but it doesn't really affect the story at all, but just things like... The boy's hair bugged me all the way through the film because he's got this shaggy mop of hair and he just looks like one of those depressive emo kids. And you sit there going, oh man, why did they let him have this haircut? And in the last shot of the film, Julianne Moore just goes and goes, he really needs a haircut. Yeah.
There was another great one that I really loved was when it was the first scene with Steve Carell in the bar and it almost seemed ad-libbed when he says, I've never been to this bar before. I always drive past it and I've always wanted to go in. And that seems like something that he just on the day would have said, you know.
Yeah.
Wait, why would my character go to a trendy bar like this? Like,
yeah.
So there was a lot of that kind of really nice.
And Carell can ad lib with the best of them.
He's genius.
So, Richard, would you recommend it to friends?
Yeah, absolutely.
No hands down? Yeah.
Hands down.
All right, so would I. Okay, let's move on. Okay, what do we got? We got entertainment news. Okay, Kevin Tancharon. May not be a household name at this point, but we've talked about him a lot on this show. He's the man who actually put out that fan film Mortal Kombat
series.
Right. Well, before the series, just that strange little,
the strange little
short film, which then got him picked up by Warner Brothers to make a web series out of Mortal Kombat, and now it is being reported on Deadline that it's all worked, because Warner Brothers has now decided to reboot it as a feature film with him directing and the writer of the web series writing.
Interesting.
So there will be a new Mortal Kombat film coming.
There you go, Christopher Lambert. You're going to get some more work.
I somehow don't think so. I think it'll be very interesting to see where they go. Apparently, it will not be related to the web series. It will be its own thing. So I'm hoping they go back and make a film of that original short film.
Nice.
That really dark noir. I think that would be really cool. Yeah. But it just shows you all those people who are out there making fan films and stuff like that. If your stuff is good enough, and the right producer sees you,
right people,
it can work. Yeah. Now, before this film gets banned, and I do apologize for our live listeners, you can't hear it.
I'll do the voiceover.
The trailer is up at geekactually.com. You can watch it there. So after the show, you can go watch it. Now, this film, Human Centipede 2, full sequence, I never saw the first Human Centipede. No. And I'm not ashamed to say I didn't see it. No. Because I had no interest in seeing it.
I have a copy of it, and I still haven't watched it.
It sits there right next to Passion of the Christ.
It sits there, and I keep looking at it, and I'm like, yeah, one day. A friend of mine has dared me to watch it, which means that I probably will sit down and watch it. Not because necessarily in the dare, you can't just win me over by daring me. But he did say, he was like, dude, you've sat through Hostel, you've sat through this, you call yourself a horror fan, you can't not see this film. And I was like, damn.
There's actually a when I put this trailer up, I Google Plus'd it, and there's been this huge people talking all about, you know, whether they've seen it, whether they haven't, we're comparing it. And I've never seen a reaction to one of my posts on Google Plus like this before.
When I posted the trailer to this, I had a friend of mine in the UK actually said, please don't promote this film. It just encourages them.
So this film, basically the story of it this time around is a fan of the first film is inspired by the first film.
Meta.
To complete the sequence. So he's a little crazy man who, because of the first film, wants to do the experiment. And so that's the basic premise of the film.
I like the premise.
The film has already been banned in the UK.
Hooray.
It's being released in America with cuts. And it has been approved, uncut, in Australia.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I say before it gets banned is because I don't believe this film will make it. The Australian Censorship Board has banned stuff post-release. It has banned stuff on the eve of release. Mm. It has banned stuff that is previously approved. All it takes is enough people to complain and it'll get banned. I'm not saying we should ban it. I'm just saying I have a funny feeling this isn't coming.
I've been surprised recently, Dave. We went and saw Sex and Zen 3D. Mm.
That's true.
And
I don't know how
no
that
idea
got
they
through.
Got past the censors.
Yeah. All right, so let's have a look at Human Centipede 2. And you make up your own minds. And as I say, for those who are watching live, the trailer is embedded at Geek Actually. You can watch it there. I do apologize about the sound. But for our audio listeners, here's this very strange little trailer.
Hey, I hope you're not time-wasting, you. I've got a dozen people waiting to look at this place. Hey, come on, let's get this lease signed, eh?
Here today because your mother is very worried about you.
He keeps on talking about a centipede with 12 people. What does that mean?
The centipede can be considered a phallic symbol. Centipedes are very aggressive creatures.
Ian, please!
Their bite can be very painful.
What are you looking at?
Me? Maybe he's connecting the pain that a centipede inflicts with the psychological and sexual abuse inflicted on him by his father. There's nothing to worry about. I'm sure it's just a passing phase.
What is this? 100% medically accurate? One digestive system? Is this a perverted film you've been talking about?
This isn't right, Martin. What you're doing, it's wrong.
I'm doing it! It's a film! Are you ever sending me to film?
Okay, comments?
As a resident horror fan, I would like to say that I see a lot of similarities between that and Halloween 3, which also had a guy watching a movie on TV that it's was true. The original one. I haven't seen the original film, so I can't comment on its connection, but I gotta say the acting looks terrible and the dialogue looks terrible and the horror is probably going to be horrific, but I think maybe people just ban this due to bad taste. just saying. Like, I mean, again, I'm going to... Exactly. And this is what people have said that I know that have seen the film. They say it looks vastly different. The first
Thank
one
you,
is...
Thank you, Chris from Bris Vegas.
And Chris has also said I should watch it. The thing that attracts me to the first one and the reason that I haven't just discounted it and thrown it away is... Shock and gore and horror is not my favorite type of horror, but it doesn't mean it can't work. And I'm willing to see the first one because, like people have said, most interesting horror character of our generation is this doctor guy that we see in the first one. And I'm curious to see it from that aspect. And it looks very psychological in the fact that it's using that representation of graphicness to really affect you as a person, which I... can understand as a horror fan, and I'm not a fan of watching on, you know, over and over again. They're not ones I will return to, but I can still look at it and go, well, you did what you were trying to do well. And so I will watch the first one before that one comes out, and I will watch the second one for us as a geek actually represented.
Wow, you take the bullet for us.
I'm
all
taking
right.
the bullet for you guys.
All right. Thanks, man. Dave Longo, right, have you got any interest in that one?
None at all.
Respectfully said, too. I
and
like
Richard, do you have any interest in that?
Maybe as a curiosity.
Sort of curiosity I was talking
it's
about.
It's like, I mean, I'm like Josh, I used to watch a lot more horror than I do now. So I've kind of got that thing. The same horror that led me to, you know, Lucio Fulci's Zombie 2 and you know, Cannibal Holocaust and all those films. But I don't know. I just don't think I can do it anymore.
It looks like a cheap piece of shit.
It doesn't. Like, it's a thing, and
it costs $500. Like, you know,
exactly, and all this banned in UK, banned in Australia, whatever. It's just going to get it publicity that I wouldn't see it otherwise. It'd probably fly below my radar. Now, look, we almost every film comes into our radar that's released in Australia because that's kind of what we do, and we have to kind of be aware. We get all the mailing lists. Otherwise, if I was just a general punter. Have no idea. It'd probably just sail right past me.
But that's,
and it would be
Christopher Bris Vegas says that the mad guy in the first film looked a lot like Christopher Walken.
Yeah. no, and it's interesting because the fact that he has no interest, this is what I was meaning. It's like, yes, it was partially a joke about the whole Halloween 3 thing at the start, but it's that same kind of attitude as the thing that I get from that movie where I see the trailer and I go... You're very much trying to be like, hey, you remember this movie?
I get a complete
different
vibe,
man. Well, we're number
two
of this film. And it's like, you're more
I get a vibe of like, hey, you're going to watch this no matter what I do. Fuck you, I'll make crap.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I really get that. Like, that's such a terrible idea
like,
for a sequel as well.
The whole film scream to you of marketing?
I watched the first one. I'm going to copy the first one. Like,
but that's what I mean. It's that marketing ploy that they seem to be selling where it's like,
that's
hey,
all it is. Like,
yeah, I know, but that's what I mean.
Let's make it grosser. Let's make it bigger. Let's make it...
But, and it's also the fact that the entire... Yeah, I know, but it's the fact that the entire setup of that trailer is... Remember that Human Centipede movie? He watched the Human Centipede movie. It was all about the human mess. It's just a movie. It's like...
I actually disagree. I think
I don't agree with you either. I
think Tom Six is trying to be clever and thinks he's making a commentary on violence in the movies.
I think he thinks he's making that movie.
That's exactly what I'm saying. He thinks he's making a movie which
is... I think
is,
he's one step
smaller. You know, people copy... You know, so what's that line out of Scream? Horror movies don't make killers, they make killers more creative.
Yeah.
You know, I hope there wasn't anybody's list this week. You know, and I think he thinks he's making that comment. What he's doing is just making, as you said, cheap marketing ploy for his otherwise...
I think he's aware of both. That's my problem. That's the reason I hate him the most, because when I look at that film, I go... You may be trying to say that, but it's covered, covered in the fact that you're trying to make money off the film. Like, make money off that first film.
Christian Prince Vegas is also throwing in a comment. Sorry for a second. Right. Christian Prince Vegas says, Josh, once you've seen the end of the first film, you'd appreciate why a sequel would be difficult.
A sequel in general is difficult, no matter how it ends, because the whole charm of the first movie for some people was the concept, and that was it.
Yeah.
And now the concept's been done and it's been parodied so many times, even in like South Park has ripped it to shreds. Now it's just a joke.
The franchise itself is a joke. It's that whole kind of Scream thing with Scary Movie. It's like essentially once you've started taking the piss out of it, people notice all the reasons why it's not quite as intense or the reasons why there is really stupidness to it. It's like you're not as involved and you're more removed from it, which is why from then on it never works. But anyway. We will see it, and I will most probably rant.
I'll wait to see how extreme it does go, and then maybe I'll go check it out.
I'm going to wait to see it get banned. Is what I'm going to wait. To see.
I'd like to be in an audience with it though, because that's kind of fun.
Yeah. I find it. It's unlikely it's a film that I would seek out and I'd go and see if I didn't have to go and see.
It's a rental. If I'm going to see it at all, it's a rental.
I doubt they'll screen it for us anyway.
Yeah, I'm not going to go to the cinema. I'm not going to spend time to go to the cinema to see it. It holds no interest to me. That's the problem.
Monster Pictures is following who's releasing in Australia. They're following me on Twitter now. So if you feel like sending us a free copy,
Look, if you want us to change our minds. You want to hear what we honestly want to say about it? Send us copies.
Openly as a horror movie, and I will report on it the same way I would any other horror movie. So,
respect for it.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's see what it can offer.
Cool. All right, let's just run through really quickly. We'll run two because that went a lot longer than I thought it was going to go. Let's run through very quickly and say that Julia Ormond is out of the Man of Steel, and she's been replaced by an actor, Israeli actress called Ailet Zur. Who is, you know, she's all right. She's kind of nice looking and everything else. But my question is that this is, you know, they're making a big deal all over the media about the fact that Lara Lorvan, the Superman's birth mother is, you know, being recast. And all I wanted to say, Josh, is that it's not an origin story. We've been promised it's not an origin story.
And I just want to say, Superman, your mum's hot.
Yeah, your mum is hot. Mm. Now, I'm actually kind of glad they replaced Julia Ormond because I think Julia Ormond's really bland.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of glad.
I've not seen Ailet Zero.
I saw her in Vantage Point.
Yeah, I've not seen that.
Which I quite liked. So that's where I've seen her from. Josh, this one's for you. Wes Craven has basically come out and said, we're probably in the works for Scream 5.
Out? Oh, what?
Oh. We've been waiting for that for ages.
Yeah.
I give up on this man, dude. I watched a movie. Actually, there's another movie I watched this week. A movie called My Soul to Take, which is
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's another one. And look, it's the same problem I have with everything that is Wes Craven now. He has good ideas and nothing else. The movie is just bland. I didn't care. The three-quarter mark, when the reveal came out, both me and my girlfriend were like, Oh, right. Oh, that was where you're going with it. Okay, thanks. Cool. Moving on. And then it finished.
What happened to Wes Craven? This man was a master of horror.
He was always about ideas. And I think, again, it's that kind of thing. It's like when the team is no longer the team and it's no longer like he's working with a group of people that are equally as interesting and equally as, you know, okay with their concepts and ideas. And it just becomes him then getting other people to work with him on his concept. That's when these, you know, titans of filmmaking start to fall, because it's like it's as much about everybody else on the set as it is about the person writing and directing. It's like it has to be the full team, and it's like they fall flat because no one's got the balls to look at him and go, you're doing it wrong. It's like when they get to the stage, everybody just goes, well, he knows what he's doing. He's Wes Craven. And you're like, no, he fucking doesn't know what he's doing. That's the problem. Scream 5, unless it gets rave reviews, I may even wait for DVD on this one. I just don't care anymore. I was just four. Yeah,
you were not favorable.
Four
to Scream
was just just boring. Mm. I got to the end and I was like, eh.
Disagree, sir. But yeah, we can arm wrestle later.
Chris from Bris Vegas wants to know if you've caught up with bereavement yet.
Respectful though.
Chris from Bris Vegas wants to know if you've caught up with bereavement.
No, but I have found a copy.
Ah, very good. Okay. Just a very quick update.
Good work.
Just a very quick update as well. We are still going to do that challenge with Battle of Los Angeles. We all have a copy of it now. Oh, yeah. We just haven't had a chance to actually do it yet. So hopefully next week we'll report back on Battle of Los Angeles.
Yeah, let's set a date on this thing so we can actually...
Next week.
Yeah, next week. Next week it's on.
And to finish off our news segment, Don Coscarelli is back.
It looks amazing.
This is the man who brought us Bubba Hotep. And once again, to our live viewers who aren't getting the audio feed for these clips, it is embedded at geekactually.com. You must go see it. It is a great-looking trailer, and I cannot wait to see this because I am a big fan of Don Coscarelli. Coscarelli? God, he's got an awkward name, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Where are you sneaking off to, sir?
I'll
yes. So here's the trailer for John Dies at the End.
Solving the following riddle will reveal the awful secret behind the universe, assuming you do not go utterly mad in the attempt. If you already happen to know the awful secret behind the universe, feel free to fast forward ahead.
David Wong? David Wong? Did you doze off there?
Black stuff, this soy sauce. That's a drug, right?
Just tell me what this stuff is, John.
Effects don't last that long?
The side effects don't last that long. The effects will last the rest of my life, I think.
Why don't you tell me about your friend John?
And that stuff, Dave, I'm remembering things that haven't happened yet.
You got to be really brave to ask yourself the scary questions.
Your friend is the only known survivor of the rest of dead. He's not looking too healthy right about now.
It be opening doors to other worlds, man.
It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen, Arnie.
So leave the police station right now during all the commotion.
There's another guy in here with me. It's another cop.
No, there's not. Check the mirror.
How does somebody get into this?
There's dead guys and drugs.
It's kind of a long story, but now we can see things.
Things are in motion, Mr. Wong.
Nothing you're seeing is real.
I suppose you are wondering where you are.
You're having like a bad trip or whatever they call it.
But there is no magic.
Answer.
Move now.
Got my attention.
Oh, it gets better. A lot better.
Why does it have to be 2012?
Yeah. Yep. For those who were in our live chat room, no, the sound didn't just get better. I put my headphones over the microphone. all right, so that's the new film. I'm getting such a Jacob's Ladder vibe from this thing. If those who haven't seen Jacob's Ladder, it was a film that came, I think it was 1990 or something like that, from director Adrian Lyne, who did Fatal Attraction. Mm. And it was this twisted thing about a guy's internal nightmares. And this kind of has that vibe coming off of it all over the place. Mm. And I love Jacob's Ladder, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Don Costanelli?
Coscarelli.
Coscarelli, thank you. Is very well known for the Phantasm series, which you either love or hate, and I can totally understand. Like, I love them, and if somebody went, I hate those films, I'd be like, I know why. I know why, and I'm cool with that. I understand why you hate it. Because underneath all the layers of filth and crap that there is on these films, they are really mind-blowingly original. Like, it's really refreshingly different to anything else you will ever see. Like, giant spinning silver balls that drill holes through your head. Like, who thinks up these things?
Exactly.
And, like, I mean, when you see films like that, and then you see a sort of older, because he was Boba Hotep, wasn't he?
He directed Boba Hotep.
Yeah. Now, when you look at that man's, like, expansion, when he got older, if you will, as a film director, as a, you know, director, he got better at writing these bizarre concepts. And when you watch Boba Hotep, you go, it's still a little silly, but that's really clever, and it's really different and really original, and I'm cool with that. And it's like, when I look at this, it seems like the kind of collaboration of the two. He's kind of let his mind loose again and just let it go 100% crazy. But it looked, and again, it may just be really good trailer cutting, but when you look at it several times, you start to notice that even though it's really bizarre, and even though there's a lot of images in there that don't make any sense in that trailer at all, you can still go, I'm along for the ride, because I know that we're not going to know what's coming, because you're going to keep us on edge like that. Like, I'm just so excited for that film. It just looks, I love original films, and that looks so original.
Dave Longo, are you going to see it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I hadn't seen that trailer before. It was amazing.
This trailer literally hit a couple of days ago.
Go watch it if you haven't watched
it. Go to geekactually.com. You can find it embedded there. It's well worth having a look at in good quality. You want to see it in good quality. There's a lot of images happening in there. Richard, are you a Coscarelli fan?
I do like Boba Hotep. I have a copy of Boba Hotep. So, yeah, I haven't seen the Phantasm series.
Don't do it.
Sorry?
I'm not sure. No. It's it.
But I do like Boba Hotep, and I've been looking for, you know, something kind of that fun sort of, as you said, original vibe. So this looks like it'll fit the bill.
Yeah, I think so. It's looking good. Okay, that didn't spark nearly as much debate as Human Centipede, which is probably a good thing because we're running late. Let's get on with our lists of five. List of five this week is five of the most quotable films. And I've written a little thing here that says, find yourself randomly quoting films for no apparent reason. So do we. And these are some of the films that did this to us. All right, so this is just... films, and once again, like we always have to put a disclaimer here, this is not necessarily a top 10 list or a top 5 list. This is just five of these films that we recommend you have a look at because they achieve whatever the lists were setting out to do. And in this case, if you think a film's going to make you, if you think you're going to get quotable films, these are the films that will do it for you. All right, I'm going to start us off. I'm going to say my number five is This is Spinal Tap.
I'd put that on my list.
Rob Reiner's first film. This is the one about the rock band and so forth, and the one that has the infamous Mine Goes to 11. Josh, you're number five.
My number five is Fight Club. My wonderful girlfriend recently was talking about this film and actually said that she was just like, it's one of the most quotable films of our generation, and I completely agree. Like, realistically, this is one of those films that just, like, there is every single moment of dialogue, there is something you could take and quote back into normal life. Just saying.
Which is where it all comes down to, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I am Jack smirking revenge. Just saying.
Richard, number five.
Point Break.
Oh yeah.
Even though every line sounds like it's out of a gay porno, like it's like, you're gonna jump or jerk off. I've written out a few quotes here for myself.
Oh, dude, that's great.
I'm so hungry I could eat the ass out of a dead rhino. Hang on, I know, Johnny, you want me so bad it's like acid in your mouth, but not this time.
Yeah.
God damn, you're one. Oh, hang on. Of course, the highly quotable, you're a real blue flame special anchorson. Young, dumb, and full of cum.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, he brought all the quotes with him. Dave Longo, what's your number five?
I've got the South Park movie, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Yes. You know what? I was trying to figure out a way to incorporate TV series.
Yeah.
I'm trying to incorporate TV series into this because realistically, TV's where all your good quotes come from, and that is perfect.
I've actually got an honorary mention that is a TV series, but it had a film, so I put it in my honorary mention. I'll come back to it later.
It's probably the same one.
It may be, but it's one that is in day to day life.
My entire life is one long quote from this film, from this TV series.
We'll come back to the honorary mentions in a minute. All right, so my number four is Life of Brian.
people.
Release Brian! I think out of all the Monty Python films,
he's not the Messiah. He's just a very naughty boy.
We're all individuals. I'm not.
One I always loved is, so you're telling me you were raped, mother?
Well, yes, at first.
At first. Or do I have a big nose? Sex, sex, sex. That's all they ever think about.
Is it too big? Do the girls like it?
I think he said, blessed are the cheesemakers.
That's really nice because they're always missing out.
She's the meek. The meek will inherit the earth. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? They need that.
That's such a terrible time.
You're number four, John.
Mine's pale in comparison to that. Number four is actually, I've got a mixture of really, really quotable ones and ones that are really personally quotable. Four is Tombstone. There are so many actors in there that all have wonderful speeches, and the amount of times whenever like a friend and me are having a standoff, even if it's over a piece of pizza and it's just eye to eye, and then somebody goes, "Well, throw down, boy," and it's just like, yeah, no, seriously, personal favorite.
Love
right there.
Tombstone.
My number four is Annie Hall.
It
could be any Woody Allen film, but I love this. It's got great lines like, you know, I heard that commentary and dissent merged and formed Dysentery. You know, hey, don't knock masturbation, it's sex with someone I love. Sex with you is a Kafka-esque experience. In California, they don't throw away the garbage away, they turn it into television shows. Yeah, it's just full of one-liners throughout the whole thing, but it's also such a beautiful film.
Annie Hall's fantastic.
And I may actually be Woody Allen from Annie Hall.
Yeah, we actually, my wife and I and my son were actually talking about Woody Allen, and the quotes were coming thick and fast from numerous Woody Allen films.
Almost put in Love and Death, which was, you know, things like, you know, let's have three children, one of each kind. You know, wheat, tremendous amounts of wheat.
And of course, you've got Take the Money and Run with App Natural, I Have a Gub.
Yeah.
Woody is a hard one because there's so many, but it's interesting because I realized that I actually own very few Woody Allen films. I'm going to have to rectify this because I love Woody Allen. All right, David Longo, you're number four.
Just like Richard with Woody Allen, I'm trying to pick a Kevin Smith movie to put in.
Oh, yeah.
Hard call.
And I ended up going with Clerks, I think.
Yeah,
of course.
Just because I see 37 everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
I was just about to say, how many Kevin Smiths did you pick? 37. Yeah.
In a row? Yeah. Don't suck any dick on your way for the parking lot. I can do the whole film with you.
No. We're good. But we got it.
But you work in a video store. I work in a shitty video store.
I want to go to a good video store so I can write a good movie. A lot of women in the world. All of them bring you lasagna at work. Yeah.
All right. My number three is I had to pick... I weighed up on this because I wanted to pick a Star Wars film because, let's face it, we all quote Star Wars nonstop, especially in the last few weeks. But I was trying to think.
I can imagine quite a bit.
What is the most quotable Star Wars film? And it came down to The Empire Strikes Back. This is the film that has Yoda, try or try not. This is the film that has Darth Vader, Luke, I am your father. It says, that's impossible. You know, the deal's getting worse by the minute. You know, this is the film that has got all the great quotes from Star Wars.
So
I'm going with The Empire Strikes Back.
Fair enough, man.
Number three, Josh.
Number three is another personal one, Human Traffic. I think any movie that has a lot of internal representation or people talking out of themselves will always have a lot of good ones. This film has great quotes between him trying to reimagine a conversation he has awkwardly with somebody, which involves them just talking out how incredibly embarrassed it is that they bumped into each other and how little they wanted to talk to each other. Whole speech, wonderful. Whole conversation about his own inability to get his penis up. Amazing conversations. And just all sort of stuff like that. And of course, anytime I'm looking at somebody while talking very fast, which we all know I do quite regularly, and I pause because I think they've lost me and I'm like, do you know what I mean? And it's just the whole speech that I'll give people is straight out of that film. That film is definitely a piece of my life.
Fantastic. Richard?
My number three is the same as your number one, Dave, so I'll skip over it.
We'll come back to that one. Okay. Your number three, Dave.
I wanted to just write Schwarzenegger.
Dude, I almost did that as well. I sat there tapping the screen like,
which one?
Which one?
And it was between Commando,
yep.
Predator, yep. Total Recall, and True Lies.
It's first. What was the choice? Get to know you.
True Lies has one of my favorite quotes of all time in it, which is,
get your ass to Mars.
No, that's Total Recall, dude. That's Total Recall.
Oh, I thought you said Total Recall.
No, True Lies.
True Lies has
my all-time favorite movie quote in it, but it's not entirely quotable, but it's just, Dana, jump, jump, and Daddy will catch you. Daddy will catch you. That's like all-time favorite.
Does anyone remember those Schwarzenegger soundboards from a few years
ago? Yeah.
But first,
I'm a cop, you idiot.
Just first, I want to get to know you. The girl, I have to get to her, find out what she knows.
I think it's Total Recall that takes the cake for
consider this a divorce.
See you at the party, Richter.
All right, number.
It's not a tumor.
Oh God,
sorry.
They're having Total Recall down the end of the table down there.
Let off some steam.
My number two is The Sure Thing, which Richard has only just discovered. But I've been watching and quoting The Sure Thing probably for the last 20 years with things like, look at these people. They probably think they're having a good time. So I have to put The Sure Thing down because I just absolutely adore this film. And yes, it is in my vernacular. A lot of this film is in my vernacular. Like protein, good for you. Your number two, Josh.
My number two is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yes.
There is just like,
I wish I put that on
you
mine.
Know what? And the worst thing about the that film is
cheese.
Yeah, exactly. And then you get the soundtrack, and the soundtrack like imprints those really, really well-known ones into your head, whether you it or not. And so every quote you can possibly imagine.
Bring out the gimp.
Yep. Dude.
Richard, you're number two.
My number two. If my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per
hour, I knew that was coming.
You're going to see some serious shit. Back to the Future had to be any top five I do. I mean, it's got... I've been quite... Like, I literally, like you, Dave, with Clerks, I've been sort of quoting this movie from end to end since it came
not
out.
Not Clerks, sure thing.
Not Clerks, yeah.
I don't think there's been a time I've met you where you haven't...
mentioned it Back to the Future thing. Even just random things like say hi to your mom for me. I just quote that constantly. And whenever we're setting something up, I'm always saying something like flux capacitor, fluxing.
First thing you said this morning when you jumped in my car was great Scott.
Great Scott. Well, you also texted me roads where we're going. Yeah. We don't need roads. So.
I didn't put Back to the Future because I knew it was going to.
I knew it was on your list.
Back to the Future, is one of those movies that's kind of crossed over. I think George Bush Senior actually used We Don't Need Roads, or maybe it was Reagan. No, it was Reagan. Sorry, yeah. Used We Don't Need Roads in his speech. It's one of those few movies.
Who was the vice president?
Who's the vice president? That's why you have so many cameras in the future. That's why your actor has to be a president. Why your president has to be an actor in the future.
Yes.
Because there are so many cameras. Yeah, of course. but it's one of those movies that, I mean, I've said it before. I think it's just such a beautiful movie anyway, but it's got so many great, like every single line is hilarious in that film. Quote it. So, Back to the Future.
Well, what's that line where she says, she goes, it's over there in my hook chest.
I know. Lorraine, my density is broken.
My density.
Oh, no, actually, the favorite line has to be that so many people, last night Darth Vader came down from the planet Vulcan and told me that if I didn't take Lorraine to the dance, he'd melt my brain.
Give us a laugh, you know. The George McFly laugh.
The George, oh, God.
Longo, you're number two.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes. Patches.
Molaram. Say hello to Carly.
You call him Dr. Jones.
No time for love, Dr. Jones.
No, short round for me. The favorite one is when Willie's on the bridge. It's like, he's crazy. It's like, he's not crazy. He's nuts. It's not bad, dude. It's brilliant.
It's bad. It's good.
Oh, with short round, some of it's really bad. Like when he steps on the bug, he's like,
you cheat big time, Dr. Jones.
No. When he steps on one of the first bugs in the crawl space, he's like, oh, I step on fortune cookie.
There's
no fortune cookies. That's for bugs.
Great stuff. No, actually, and yeah, I. I almost had Indiana Jones
and
the Temple of Doom.
And I also
on my
love
list.
Water. Water.
Water.
And then he turns Water!
All right, here we go. The number ones. My number one is the same as your number
three,
and it's got to be the Blues Brothers.
It has to be the Blues Brothers.
It has to be the Blues Brothers.
Okay, let's do a bit of riffing on this one day. I think we have to. Illinois Nazis.
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Mr. Man. Mr. Man.
I want to buy your children. How much for the little girl?
Your women. Your children.
It's got a cup motor, a 44 cubic inch plant. It's got cup tires, cup suspension, cup tracks. It was made before catalytic converters, so it runs good on regular gas.
Fix a cigarette lighter.
Have you got that one, which is like, we got half a tank of gas?
Oh, yeah. It's 106 miles to Chicago. Got
half a tank of gas. No, half a tank of cigarettes. Half a pack of cigarettes, a full tank of gas. It's dark and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
We are fucking incredibly
look, nervous. Look, disco pants and haircuts.
Oldsmobiles are in early this year.
This mall's got everything.
There was an earthquake, a terrible flood, locust, it wasn't my fault. I swear to God.
Stein, you look awful funny eating corn on the cob with no fucking teeth.
We got both kinds, country and western.
I'll have 12 whole chickens, please.
Four fried chickens and a Coke.
That's it.
Yeah. Dry white tails, please.
Would you like a drink with that? No, ma'am.
And then he orders toast, doesn't he? Or is that
dry white toast.
Dry white toast.
Dear. Yes, no, infinitely quotable. I have seen the Blues Brothers so many times, I can't even count how many times I've seen it. And at one point, I could actually quote the entire film from opening credits
probably
to closing credits.
Can.
Maybe if I sat down and thought about it. But we actually went on a hike at one point in high school, and to pass the time, my friend and I, who actually were part of the Blues Brothers, people who went to the Valhalla every Friday, we literally recited the film from the beginning to the end to pass the time on the trek.
Because you know, people, when you do find that special somebody, you got to hold that woman, hold that man, love him, tease her, squeeze him, please her.
I'd like to
hold
thank
and squeeze
all
him, please
of
that
Los
person.
Angeles
just
police
and of course,
orange whip.
We have to finish this off with the classic, which is "We're on a mission from God." Josh, you're number one. Top that.
My number one is Scarface. And if anybody wants to try and argue with that, good luck. Like, realistically, this man, say hello to my little friend.
Say
goodnight
to the bad guy.
But also, just like the first film I ever really took dialogue seriously in. Like, like the scenes, like when he's sitting at the table and he has this whole say goodnight to the bad guy speech and stuff like that. It's just one
you
giant
You people need
quote.
People like me.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the whole film is a giant quote.
Yeah.
And you can pick any moment of it, and
absolutely.
You can use it in regular life. So
put it away, man. You look like a fucking lizard.
Yours, man.
Anybody who knows me knows it's Ghostbusters.
I knew that was on your list, too.
This chick is dope. I mean, most of them are from...
I love this town.
Yeah, most of them are from Bill Murray.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about this before
back
we
off,
came
man,
in.
I'm a scientist.
It's, you know, yeah, that's on here. Back
are you
when,
on your period?
Don't cross the stream. Tell them about the Twinkie.
What about the Twinkie?
You know, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. And also have to... This one goes a little bit of setup. Everything was fine until Dickless here shut up the generator. Is this true? Yes,
this,
it's true.
This man has no dick.
You know, why worry? Each of us is carrying an unlicensed nuclear accelerator on his back.
You know. Good safety tip.
Let's show this prehistoric bitch how we do things downtown.
Next time someone asks you if there's a god,
you say yes. Nobody steps on a church in my town.
This Mr. Stay Puff's okay. He's a saint.
He's in New York. We'll get him laid. It's Miller time.
Yes.
Let's go back to Miss Barrett's apartment and check her out. I'll go back to Miss Barrett's apartment.
This meal represents the last of the petty cash.
Have you guys going to try this poll? It's okay, Ray. Everybody has three mortgages.
I'm sick of this shit. All you can keep your $2. All right. right.
Sorry, no human being would start books like this.
Egon, your mucus.
I should have said Ghostbusters.
Someone who blows their nose and you want to keep it?
Okay, David.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. Number one.
It's just in case you hadn't got it, it was Ghostbusters.
Shut the fuck up! We get it. No.
Number one, most quotable. Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Oh, yeah! Yeah. Ventura, Satan.
Sorry, I'd totally forgotten that one.
Woo! Do not go in there!
If I'd been drinking out of the toilet, I could have been killed. No, my favorite of the whole movie is... I'm looking for Ray Finkel.
No, and a clean pair of shorts.
A clean pair of shorts. Oh, look. Little football cookies.
what's the detective? What's the detective's name?
Einhorn.
Einhorn's a man.
I kissed a man. Is that a gun in my hip?
He says, "Do you have any gum?" Yeah. No, and I prefer you stay out of my business. You're a strange guy, Ace.
I just want to go to the bathroom. What are you doing, number one or number two? Just want to know how much time I have.
Well, can I be the voice of dissent here? And so I saw it once and hated it.
Oh, really? And you know what? And you know what? I do not blame you at all. I saw
hate all early Jim Carrey films.
Really?
They're shit.
I saw, okay, can't agree. Here's the trick here. I saw Ace Ventura at the cinema in first release, and it was making a buck ton of money. Yeah. Remember? It was this huge, completely unexpected hit. Mm. And I went, well, I've got to go see it. Because I actually loved Jim Carrey from In Living Color when he was actually on the Wayans Brothers series. And I thought, this guy's going to be a star. Mm, yeah. And then he showed up in that bad 80s comedy film Once Bitten, and he was really physical in that. And I thought, I said, this guy's really talented. There's something about this guy. I said, I bet you this guy's going to be a star. And then Ace Ventura showed up, and it was this massive hit. And we thought, okay. So I went to see it, and I actually hated it. And I actually watched it sitting there going, wow, this is really unfunny. And I actually ran into a guy in LA who was a massive Ace Ventura fan. And this was right around the time that Ace Ventura 2 was about to come out. And he would do nothing but quote Ace Ventura all day long at work. And he was just a massive fan. So I sat and watched it again, and I had his voice in my head while I was watching Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
And I laughed my ass off watching Ace Ventura, and it has become one of those incredibly quotable films ever since. And I don't like the second one, but the first one, even though it's bad, all those quotes that just came flying out just now make me laugh every time I watch that film.
No, dude, and it's funny because I saw like you remember the Your Highness?
Yeah, yeah.
Now I went and saw that and I fucking loved it, right?
Yeah, and I hated it. Yeah.
Two people at work said they fucking hated the film, and yet we were stuck around for an hour. And we all just started quoting the film. And at the end of it, they were like, you know what? I think I actually really like that film. And I'm like, there you go. There you go. All it is a mindset. You go in with the wrong mindset and you're not going to see the jokes.
And here's the killer for you, Richard. The first time I saw the Blues Brothers was on home video by myself. And I hated it.
Yeah.
I thought it was really unfunny. And I didn't understand what the attraction was. And I didn't get it.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine introduced me to the Valhalla and took me to see the Blues Brothers doing it and the whole room full of people.
Yeah.
And I had such fun that from that point onwards, I went with them every week and I saw the film a million times and I loved it.
Yeah, I don't think anything would convince me of Ace Ventura.
Once again, time and context. Put it in time and place.
You're putting out that barrier.
Yeah,
I think
it may be time, Richard, for you to sit around with a couple of beers and watch it again.
It's just not my sort of comedy.
Okay. And that's cool.
That's cool indeed. But
actually, in fact, I really disliked Jim Carrey up until I can't even remember what it was that I saw that changed my mind. And everything, he just physically repulsed me.
Oh, so whereas I really quite liked him. So.
And I couldn't stand watching him the same way people just can't stand Jerry Lewis.
It's like, I love, you know, one of my favorite comedies is still Liar Liar.
You know, but Liar Liar might have actually been the one that actually changed me. Because I remember seeing that and thinking, yeah, okay. Because that was that slight bit of drama he was bringing into it there as well. And then after that, he did dramatic roles.
What do you think of my hair? Anything that takes a focus from your anything that takes a focus from your face?
Yeah. But it's, you know, He's a better dramatic actor, I think, than comedian. And now, I think.
He was actually back then as well. Funnily enough, at the time of In Living Color, so before Ace Ventura even, he was actually in a made-for-TV movie called Doing Time on Maple Drive, which is about a dysfunctional family, and he was an alcoholic son in it. And he was exceptional. And I sat there watching going, wow, you've really got chops. And then he turns up in Ace Ventura and he's in there going, what the hell is, where is the trajectory of your career here, you know? But
as we all know from him, there is no trajectory to his career. It kind of goes like this.
Yeah. Well, actually, he's a funny guy. If you actually read about his early career, he actually said that he would actually sit in front of a mirror for hours. Just pulling faces, because he said that the idea as a comedian, he needed to know exactly what he looked like doing everything.
Yeah.
And so he would literally every weird rubber face that he would pull on in his comedy, he knew exactly what he looked like because he would spend hours just watching himself. And then the one part of the story I really love is he wrote himself $1 million check and put it in a drawer and basically said, one day I'll be able to cash that.
Do you know what he did with that check?
What did he end up doing with it?
Beautiful. He put it in his father's tuxedo in the coffin.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
That's
very
good.
Nice. So yeah, I do disagree with you, Richard, but I respect your opinions, but I disagree with them.
Well, it's comedy. It's like
absolutely, and comedy is completely subjective. And for those who don't like Jim Carrey, I don't begrudge anybody for not liking Jim Carrey. It is a flavor, and it's not going to be to everybody's taste. So he is a very distinct flavor. So, all right. That's it. I think we're done. I've got some honorary mentions here I want to throw out really quickly. One of them is a TV series that I probably quote in my daily life more than anything else. And the funny thing is, I actually quote it. My wife quotes it. My son quotes it constantly. And I didn't bring it up on the show because it's a television series. However, they did make a film out of the TV series as well. And the film is quotable as well. And all I'm going to say is you don't need a license to drive a sandwich. And that is and that is the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. SpongeBob SquarePants, the series, we quote nonstop. It is actually one of the funniest shows on television, I think, as a comedy, just for adults, especially the first four seasons. And the other one that we quote a lot, and I didn't put it onto my list because it's really only three or four quotes that we quote from it a lot, but it is quoted as part of people's vernacular, which is 2001 A Space Odyssey with I can't do that, Dave.
That's exactly what my dad says to me all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mind's going, Dave.
Exactly. And so, but it's only like four or five lines that everybody quotes from that film. So that's why I didn't make the list. But those quotes are very big.
For me, TV show Simpsons is a classic.
Absolutely.
If we're going to let them in with their
own. And they've got a film as well.
And you know what?
And they have a film. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And I would actually say that probably the most quoted thing in my entire life is Futurama. And that can make the list too because it has a thing. But only seasons 1 to 4. Then you can all fuck
Seinfeld.
Off.
Yeah.
I got to say, Seinfeld for you. Yeah. For me, Friends was quoted an awful lot.
To the film stakes, I'd also add Army of Darkness.
Oh, yes.
This is my boomstick. Hail to the King,
yo,
baby.
She bitch. Yeah. Let's dance.
Yeah. I'm sorry, lady, but you're going to have to leave the store. There's
Shop Smart.
Shop S-Mart. more recently, Zoolander, I guess.
And this is very interesting because I hated Zoolander.
And it's just one of those things that it's kind of just one of those things where I'm just dropping lines randomly. Somebody's really, really, really good looking. Whenever I see a scale model of anything, I go, what is this? A building for ants? You know, just things like that that drop in. I think there's a lot of stuff from Toy Story that I actually drop in a lot, which I don't think. Fight Club was on my other rants. I almost put it on. Glad you did, Josh. And more recently, something I've watched recently again and realized how much was I quoted was Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I particularly the line. You killed the car. But particularly the line, you're not dying, you just can't think of anything better to do. You know. which pretty much sums up my life.
You're an asshole.
Yeah. I've also just learnt via text that Susan's tuned out because my modem's just died at home for some reason.
Oh, dear.
It's blinking. So my internet's dead at home. So I've got a long weekend with no internet by the looks of it.
Unless you just you might just need to
turn
recycle.
It on and off again. The lights are blinking, so unless Telstra's just gone down again.
Oh, well, that would suck.
Why have you got Telstra? No, all right, moving on.
Because it's cable and it's cheapish and it's good. And
keep telling yourself that.
And I've been on it for years, and my primary email address is tied to it, and it's just a bitch to change now.
Okay.
Yeah.
You keep telling yourself
that. Yeah, like, I don't. I've got too much of a headache to care at this point. Like,
all right, we're going to get ourselves out of here.
Yeah,
I just have to mention the Big Lebowski.
Oh, of course.
The dude bud.
I'm not Lebowski, man. I'm the dude.
Aliens.
Yeah. Yes. I almost put Aliens on my list.
Yeah.
And almost. I had two Kubrick movies, Dr. Strangelove and The Shining.
Oh, yeah, The Shining.
You've always been here.
Yeah.
Mm. Hey, Vasquez, if any, you've ever been mistaken for a man.
No, you.
Here's Johnny.
Are we ready?
Let's finish this puppy.
We're going to roll this out. We could be here quoting all afternoon. So let's get ourselves out of here. You can get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, follow our Tumblr accounts, go to geekactually.com. There's a big follow us button. You can follow everything we do. Okay. But what you can't find on there is information about where to follow. Actually, you can. There's a link right on the front page. But Dave Longo, tell us where people can find more of you on the internet.
You can follow me on Twitter at Dave Longo. Just trying to remember my own fucking name.
well, I'm glad you managed to nail that down.
And you can read my stuff at damngoodcup.com.
Fantastic. And Richard Gray, where can people find more of you on the internet?
As always, you can find me at therealbits.com. Sorry, I've got the killer headache at the moment. Josh has just passed out of my shoulder.
You guys have no stamina.
That's what she said.
It had to make it in there.
Yeah. You can find me, as always, at therealbits.com. That's REELBITS.com or on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And Josh, where can we find more of your stuff?
All over the interwebs. Stuff at GamesPron. I co-run RawDLC.com, which is a gaming website, and find me and follow me on Twitter because I want more Twitter followers.
And you can't remember your Twitter handle, but it will be on the show notes. So you follow him right there.
It's dog meat, but you have to know how to spell dog meat. Which means that you have to be a regular.
Yeah,
which is probably my own.
If you follow any one of us, you'll find.
I didn't know what Twitter was when I signed up to it. It's not my fault.
All right, we need to.
Wow, condescending much?
It's not my fault. I swear to God.
All right, let's bundle this puppy up and we can get out of here. First thing we're gonna say is we've got a couple friends out there we like to follow. Real Junkies are back. They finally put up a new episode. Find them at weekendronin.com or search for them on iTunes. REEL. They like to. They like to review films as well, but they drink a lot while they do it. They're a lot of fun. You can also find Charlie and Brad over at reboundradio.com. Brad was in our chat room during the Geek Actually show. They do a podcast together called Good Day Sir, and they also have another podcast on that particular network that I really enjoy called Movie Matchup, and that's the one where he apologized because they put bad Australian accents on. I listened to it, Charlie. It's not so bad. Relax. It's just very broad. And you can find out more about our cartoonist, Joss Spencer, who does our cartoon artwork for our cover arts and so forth, attackninja.blogspot.com. And today, our opening clip was from the film Bruce Almighty, which had a very early appearance by Steve Carell, which is why we put it in there. Now, for our closing music, I couldn't get my hands on, conveniently, the soundtrack to Crazy Stupid Love, and B, none of the tracks were really that inspiring to throw out as closing music. So I decided that it was time to do just something completely out of left field. And so we're putting a track on to close us off here today called Pompeii, and it's from an album by a group called E.S. Posthumus. Now, if this sounds familiar to you at all, it's the music that was used in the trailer for the first Spider-Man movie, which is where you'll find it. And if you like this music, it's an independent group, but you can get them on Amazon.com now. They used to only be out through their own album. So we'll let them take us out. I'm sure you'll recognize this music when you hear it. They're about four or five of their tracks were used in different trailers, including the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes, and Fox loved their music, obviously. They're just trailers, not cinema films, but their album sounds like it should be a soundtrack. And if nobody has anything else to add down this table? No? In that case, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week for Real Steel and Flashdance. And we'll see you all next week.
That'd be Footloose.
Oh, sorry, not Flashdance. You're right, that would be Footloose. Real Steel and Footloose is what I meant to say. It is late.
Let's just do Flashdance anyway. Now you've said it.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
hope you enjoyed the show. And just a reminder that if you enjoyed Film Actually, you might also enjoy our geek podcast called Geek Actually, which you can also find on iTunes or at geekactually.com. It's our weekly nonsense podcast where we talk about tech and geek and fun things and food and just about everything else that we can think of. We have a lot of fun doing it, and we hope you come along and join us. You can also watch that live at 12 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time at geekactually.com/live.